You are Locked On Rockets, your daily Houston Rockets podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
It all comes down to the final 2 days. The Rockets took care of their business on Sunday night with a 149-113 annihilation of the Phoenix Suns. It's Houston's 20th win in the last 23 games, improving them to 53-28 on the season. But based on the other results amongst relevant Western Conference playoff teams, Portland, Denver, Oklahoma City, what we now know is that going into the final 2 days of the regular season, which for the Rockets concludes on Tuesday night at Oklahoma City, so many outcomes are now on the table, including the number 2 seed, the number 3 seed, and the number 4 seed. And as far as potential playoff opponents, it runs even deeper and longer, the potential list, than that. So with that as the backdrop, welcome in to another postgame episode of Locked On Rockets on this Sunday, April 7th. As always, this is your home for daily podcast commentary on everything Houston Rockets basketball. I'm your host, Ben Dubose, Rockets correspondent with Sports Talk 790, the team's official radio flagship in Houston. As we chat this Sunday evening, the Rockets are coming off, as stated, a 149-113 beatdown of the visiting Phoenix Suns at Toyota Center. Houston took care of business. The Suns, 19-62. They are nowhere near as good as the Rockets. They're playing out the string. James Harden had 30 points, 13 rebounds, 9 assists in just 29 minutes with somehow a plus 39. Eric Gordon had 26 points. His 8 made threes tied a career high. He stays hot. We know since March 1st he's been better than 45%. He further built on that tonight, 8 of 13 behind the arc. P.J. Tucker made 4 threes. Clint Capella had 22 points and 13 rebounds. Lots of individual positives for the Rockets, including the team as a whole, which, by the way, made 27 three-pointers, setting a new all-time NBA record for made threes in a single game with 27. Lots of positives for the Rockets, who, after having another good defensive performance in the first half, allowing Phoenix just 47. Now, of course, with extensive garbage time, they relapsed a bit on that end. It's understandable. Offensively, though, 149 points, they shot well throughout, made 27 of 57 threes, and, as stated, got the NBA record. They've come so close to breaking their own mark of 26 throughout the second half of this season. Finally, they got it on an Austin Rivers made three with just under 2 minutes left to play. So the Rockets, they did what they should do against an outmanned Phoenix team. They took care of business, and Houston now wins, again, 20 of 23. They're 53-28 overall, and in solo possession of the number 3 spot in the Western Conference, entering the final game of the season. Also, before I forget, today's show on this Sunday night is sponsored by our friends over at Wyze. Wyze, that's W-Y-Z-E, is the indoor camera that does it all. Head on over to wyze.com/lock to get the guaranteed lowest price on all of their top-notch camera equipment. Again, that's wyze.com/lock. Anyway, jumping back into the program and our dissection in segment one of our usual 3 points recap, we will talk about what happened, the individual highlights, the rotation takeaways in segments two and three. Here off the top, though, as we've been doing of late, the key storyline for the Houston Rockets on this Sunday is what went on around the entire NBA. It was a very busy day because the NBA takes Monday off entirely. No one plays because of the NCAA's national title game. So Sunday, Tuesday, and Wednesday, even though the Rockets don't play on Wednesday, there's a lot of potentially relevant games. More on that momentarily. And to get back to the theme of what the Rockets did tonight against Phoenix and why it's important, well, they did not get a lot of help elsewhere. Oklahoma City, it would have been very beneficial, especially after the Clippers lost on Friday night. We discussed that on Saturday's show. If OKC lost to Minnesota, they did not. If Denver had won at Portland, that would have pushed Houston 2 games in front of Portland with only 1 to play for the Rockets, guaranteeing a top 3 seed. That did not happen. So that's not all bad, because to be clear, with Denver losing at Portland and that home-and-home, we've talked about that for a while, it went largely as could be expected between two good teams, Denver and Portland, each one at home, and Denver on the road, opting to rest Nikola Jokic, Jamal Murray, Paul Millsap, the Nuggets, the Blazers. It was a bit circuitous, the route they took to get there. Ultimately, though, the end result, they split it, the home team won each side of it, and we entered the final 2 days of the regular season with the Nuggets at 27 losses and the 2 seed, the Rockets at 28 losses and the 3 seed, and the Blazers at 29 losses and the 4 seed. And the reason this is complicated is because Houston would lose a tiebreaker with Portland, they would win a tiebreaker with Denver, and they would also win a 3-team tiebreaker if the Nuggets lost their last two, which is not impossible. On Tuesday, they're going to be underdogs at Utah. And if that were to happen, then the Rockets would win a 3-team tiebreaker between those three, and all of them would be at 29 losses. But because Denver beat Portland for a division, that would be decided first. And then Houston, their head-to-head tiebreaker over Denver, would be applied. So, as far as the Rockets are concerned, I don't want to say it was a day of bad results. I would say there was more bad than good, but it certainly wasn't awful. Because with Denver losing and now only being one game ahead of the Rockets in the loss column, and the Rockets holding the tiebreaker, the number two seed is definitely on the table. The downside is that to get it, in all likelihood, not 100%, but in all likelihood, you're going to have to win a tough finale at Oklahoma City. And the reason the Oklahoma City win today in Minnesota was so harmful is that because they won the game, they now pass both the Spurs and the Clippers in the loss column, and they are currently the number six seed in the Western Conference with 33 losses. The Clippers, who lost at Golden State, that was another game on Sunday, and the Spurs, each at 34 losses. So as far as the dream scenario, and it's a nightmare for the Thunder, of being the eight seed and playing the Warriors, that's not going to happen unless they lose at least one of their last two games against the Rockets at home on Tuesday and then at Milwaukee on Wednesday. So the Thunder have a lot to play for. There was talk a few days ago that maybe going into the finale, the Thunder would be locked or almost locked into the number eight seed. Well, because their playoff positioning, their tiebreakers, their situation is really poor. Well, since they won this game, while the teams around them, the Spurs last week against the Kings, the Clippers, they let that game against the Lakers slide, that's let the Thunder back in a situation where they control their own destiny. And for them to make any run at all, they do not want to be the eight seed playing against the Warriors. So are the Rockets better than the Thunder? Yes. I think they can win that game. However, a playoff team on the road, even the Rockets a year ago, when they won 65 games, even if we want to say these current Rockets, they've won 20 of 23, they're back. Okay, well, even when you were 65 and 17 a year ago, you still lost games on the road to playoff quality teams. You lost to the Wolves a game in round one. You lost to the Jazz a game in round two. So yeah, especially on the road, it's a losable game. I hope the Rockets come out and take advantage. Would it be shocking if they did not? No, because the Thunder, especially if Russell Westbrook and Paul George are healthy, that's a really, really talented basketball team. So I think for Houston, the ideal would have been that game not mattering that much, or the incentive being taken away from the Thunder. Well, now neither of those is the case. It's going to be meaningful for both teams. The Rockets, they're not going to be able to rest because it's pretty big in the standings. Whether you're the two or three or the four and being on the Golden State side of the bracket, it could all hinge on that game. So as far as the Oklahoma City side of things, the main reason you wanted them to lose, you want them to be the eight seed, and that's still possible. If Houston beats Golden State and San Antonio and the Clippers take care of business, then yeah, the Thunder could still be the 8th seed. That's possible. Or even if Houston doesn't, then they could lose at Milwaukee, and then depending on what happens elsewhere around the league, then the Spurs and the Clippers could still pass them. So it's possible. But Houston, as far as the Thunder situation, putting them as the 8 and not playing them in round 1, the good news, that's within Houston's control. And as far as the Thunder in particular, the reason I wanted them to lose the game on Sunday was the incentive angle. If you're actually worried about playing Oklahoma City in a playoff series, which I can see, they're daunting, the good news as I see it is that if Oklahoma City is that good, if Russell Westbrook, Paul George, they can dig deep and become more than the sub-500 team they've been for the last 6 weeks or so of the season, it should show up on Tuesday. And if it does, then you're probably not going to play him in the first round because the odds are that would drop the Rockets to the four seed. And if the Thunder are that good, they'll be the six and somebody else will be the three, and that'll be their problem. If the Thunder are beatable, then hopefully the Rockets take care of business on Tuesday and they do it. And if that's the case, they're probably not going to be the six, and they might even be the eight playing Oklahoma City or playing Golden State in that OKC Warriors series that we've been wanting for so many weeks now. So it's not so much that I'm worried about Houston, Oklahoma City in round one. It's more that it would have been nice to have the final game of the season not that meaningful, because anything can happen over 48 minutes. Sometimes better teams lose, and now a lot is going to be on the line for the Rockets. Now, the good news, it depends on how you look at it, is that because Denver largely tanked that game on Sunday night, sitting so many of their regulars, and now Portland won back of Houston, Denver won in front of Houston, well, it makes the number two seed very attainable as well. And in a lot of those scenarios, it looks like the Clippers could be the seven, especially if Houston beats Oklahoma City on Tuesday evening. So essentially what's happened is that you've increased your variance. With 2 days left, again, no one plays on Monday, we don't know what's going to happen. What we do know is that the Rockets, anywhere from the number two through the number four, all of those outcomes are possible, and a lot's going to be determined, quite frankly, after the Rockets play. Now, because Houston tips at 8:30 on Tuesday night, in Oklahoma City, they will be the last game of that night. So by the time the Rockets go final, we'll know what happens. The Nuggets play at the Jazz. They're likely to be underdogs, although who knows? We'll see with the Jazz on a back-to-back how aggressive they are in terms of playing their regulars. The same goes for the Nuggets. By the time the Rockets go final Tuesday, we'll see and we'll know every other game in the association that night. But it may not be over, because here's the thing. If the Rockets win that game, then they're guaranteed at least a top three spot. And if Denver loses to Utah, they'll actually be guaranteed the number two spot. Houston could clinch the number two on Tuesday night if the Rockets beat the Thunder and the Nuggets lose at Utah. Because at that point, they'd be tied, the Rockets and Nuggets in the loss column. The Blazers at 29, they can't catch. So no matter what happens the final night, you could be locked into the number two on Thursday, and then you're just waiting on the final, or on Tuesday, and you're just waiting on the final results to determine who the number seven is. The flip side is that if Houston loses to Oklahoma City, while it would not be an ideal scenario, you would not be eliminated from the number two and number three race by any stretch of the imagination. If Denver were to lose at Utah, actually the number two would still be in the mix, because then Denver could lose home against Minnesota, the finale for the Nuggets on Wednesday night, and the Blazers are home against the Kings. Those are not gimme games. Also, the Blazers are at the Lakers on Tuesday night. The Lakers just beat the Clippers. They seem to be trying hard. So even if Houston loses on Tuesday, it would drop them into a tie in the loss column with the Portland Trail Blazers. And if it's in a two-team tie, then the Blazers, they would have the tiebreaker. With that said, it's possible that there could be a three-team tie and Houston could win that. And if Portland were to lose, which they could against a Kings team, again, the tricky thing, the finale night, Denver against Minnesota and Portland against Sacramento, the Wolves and the Kings are the two teams that don't seem to be fully tanking. They are still trying. They are still competing. These are teams that have ideas on winning next season. They're not likely to have a top five, even a top 10 type pick. So there is a level of focus there. As far as the Rockets, I think the number four seed is more likely than not if they lose on Tuesday. And of course, that'd mean Utah, not Oklahoma City, in round one. Beyond that, though, I don't think we can say that it's a done deal. You can say more likely than not, but Minnesota and Sacramento, those are lively dogs. And for a lot of those teams, especially those that are still trying, they know it's the last game that they will play for several months. They might want to go out and make a statement in that finale. So I would say what happened on Sunday, generally it increases the variance. At the bottom of the bracket, Oklahoma City is no longer ticketed to number seven or number eight. They have a path to number six, and that's a little threatening. As far as the top of the bracket, the Rockets, they're no longer guaranteed a top three. They could be the number four, but guess what? If they win, they could also be the number two. A lot of it is still to be determined in the days ahead. And generally, we have a much better idea going into the season's final 2 days of what's going to happen. This year, we don't. It's going to be a fascinating final 2 days of basketball. And as far as what the Rockets can control, Well, that's a lot of it, because if they win, then yeah, you clinch a top three. In my opinion, a damn good shot at a top two, because Denver finishing at Utah, home versus Minnesota, a back-to-back, I think there's a really good shot that they could drop one of those two games. And even Portland, for that matter. As far as Sunday's Nuggets-Blazers game, even with the Nuggets resting all those guys, the Blazers still almost lost. They were down by 7 with just over 4 minutes to go. So I don't think that the Blazers, without Jusuf Nurkić, CJ McCollum in his first game back, I don't think they're some huge force either. So many things are still on the table. And I guess the one silver lining I'll leave you with, if you're afraid of Oklahoma City, and I know some are based on their talent, if OKC beats Houston on Tuesday night, I think the odds, even though today, as the season, if the regular season were to end on this Sunday night, Houston's the 3, Oklahoma City the 6. If it ended today, that would be the round one matchup. In my opinion, the odds of those two teams actually playing in round one got a decent bit worse today, simply because of the reality that they play one another. And if Houston wins that game, you drop Oklahoma City possibly to 8, and then you get the Golden State OKC series you always wanted. And if OKC wins, then the downside, Houston's on the Golden State side of the bracket at 4, but the upside, relative, is that you're probably not playing OKC in round one. As I see it, of course, there's a lot of uncertainty. It's not all bad, and also there's a lot of upside. The Rockets, somehow, in this season, they started 11-14. They could actually be the number 2 seed, now only one game behind Denver, which has a very difficult game at Utah looming Tuesday in the race for the Western Conference number 2 seed. Imagine that. We'll get back into our show momentarily with segments 2 and 3, talking a bit more about Sunday's game individually between the Rockets and Suns. But for now, I want to tell you a little bit about our friends over at Wise, the sponsor responsible for bringing you today's show here at Locked on Rockets. And Wyze, that's W-Y-Z-E, is the indoor camera that does it all. Their mission is to bring amazing smart home products and make them accessible to everyone, which they do since their camera footage can be accessed from anywhere via your mobile phone. Wyze is packaged with premium features, allowing users to see everything they need for only $20. There's no subscription required, it can work with Alexa, and there's free rolling 14-day cloud storage. So how does it work? The camera runs 1080p in full HD, which means the images are so clear that you won't miss a thing. You can connect with life as it unfolds, all in sharp focus. It also comes with night vision and two-way audio. As far as potential applications, you can check on your home anytime with the Wyze app's live stream, which comes with an 8x digital zoom. If you're worried about kids or pets, you can watch them, and you can even keep tabs on contractors and their work through the time-lapse feature. Want more? They've got that too. Because for just $10 extra, the Wyze Cam Pan gives you 360-degree coverage in under 3 seconds and automatically detects, tags, and tracks motion within its field of view. After all, since life moves fast, your camera should too. To check out all the products, just go to wyze.com/locked. That's wyze.com/locked to get the guaranteed lowest price. And now to the game itself. We spent the first segment of our usual 3 points recap breaking down the playoff implications of all of Sunday's results. Now, in segments 2 and 3, we'll discuss what we learned on the basketball floor, because at this point of the season for the now 53-28 Rockets, especially against teams like the New York Knicks on Friday night and the Phoenix Suns on Sunday night, I think, assuming you win the games, which fortunately the Rockets did, again, a 149-113 absolute beatdown over the now 19-62 Phoenix Suns, assuming you win, the particulars are secondary, because obviously the season finale in Oklahoma City on Tuesday and then the playoffs, whoever you play, are going to be a lot tougher. So what I'll look at here, beyond just the obvious statistics, first we'll talk about tactically some of the things that I noticed tonight that I thought at least had some relevance, and then we'll close out discussing the rotation and what I think specifically Iman Shumpert over Gerald Green, Nene over Kenneth Faried, some of the tells we may have gotten on that front from Jeff Bezdelic, who actually was still coaching. Mike D'Antoni's doing better, but still sidelined by the stomach flu. That said, I think it would be silly to think that Jeff Bezdelic is acting unilaterally. I'm sure the rotations have heavy input from Coach D'Antoni, even if he's not physically in the building at Toyota Center. So, first things first, as far as what happened, the 149-113 beatdown of the Suns on Sunday night, James Harden led the way in scoring, 30 points, also tied for the team lead in 13 rebounds. Some of the Rockets actually out-rebounded Phoenix by 10. Yes, I know it's the Suns, DeAndre Ayton didn't play. But when you consider the Rockets' rebounding issues all season long, you'll take a plus 10 differential against anyone. I don't care the opponent. And beyond Clint Capella having his usual big game inside, 22 and 13, to get 13 boards from James Harden in just 29 minutes, to go with his 30 points, 9 assists on 71% shooting, a team best plus 39 in his 29 minutes. That's staggering. And perhaps the most noteworthy thing about how he did it was that it really wasn't a quintessential Harden game in which you say, well, the opponent doesn't care, so Harden's going to break him down off the dribble. No, what was unique about this game, the Suns seemed so focused on getting the ball out of James Harden's hands and not allowing him to beat them that they were often trapping him before he got to the half-court line. That's how devoted they were to the idea of making anyone else beat them. Well, what ended up happening is, in those cases, Harden would pass the ball to someone, and then at that point, it became a 4-on-3 with Chris Paul, Eric Gordon, Clint Capella, and PJ Tucker. That's a pretty good foursome. And then when those guys are also making their open shots, everyone other than Chris Paul did, although Chris Paul still had 9 assists, 5 steals, so he definitely contributed, plus 30. But Eric Gordon, 26 points, 8 of 13 from the field. We've said since the start of March, when he's been shooting better than 45% from behind the arc, he's the variable. Eric Gordon making those shots, that's what takes them from good to great. And now, amazingly, on the year, Eric is above 30%, 36%. From behind the arc. This is a guy who was in the low 30s as recently as late February. So it's been a huge uptick. And of course, the Rockets, now they've won 20 of their last 23 games. They're the number 3 seed in the Western Conference. Their run has came just as Eric Gordon has gotten it going. So that in and of itself has been a welcome development. In terms of Sunday's game specifically, it largely came because, again, the Suns were trapping, and it was 4-on-3. Someone was going to be open. At times, it was Eric Gordon. He made them pay on the threes. At other times, it was the log game because they came out hard on the shooter, and at that point, Clint Capella got to finish inside. He also rebounded really well and had a couple of nice putbacks in traffic, in which, on top of his usual athletic gifts, a young guy in his mid-20s, he's gotten so much physically stronger, and against a very young Suns team, he was able to take advantage of them on the low block. PJ Tucker also made 4 of his 9 threes, especially from the corners. He was really hot and confident tonight. That's a good sign. And then the amazing thing was, despite having those 4-on-3 advantages, somehow on top of it, James Harden still scored 30 on 10 of 14 shooting, which again is just blistering efficiency, nearly 72% from the field, made 5 of his 6 threes. And for the outmatched Suns, it was basically pick your poison. I think once Eric Gordon hit his 8th three-pointer, which tied his career high, they finally stopped trapping as frequently as they were early in the game. And at that point, in the remaining minutes of the third quarter, that's when James Harden went to work. And he finally got to 30. I say finally because he's often done it in a half in this crazy Rockets season, this MVP campaign, or at least should be back-to-back for James Harden. Now he does not have to do that as much because he has the help. And as far as what to take from it, look, I don't think playoff teams are going to be trapping James Harden with any sort of regularity because, as Chris Paul said after the game, CP, Eric Gordon, Capella, Tucker, those four, they are very capable of making anyone look silly if they're allowed to play 4-on-3, especially if Eric Gordon and PJ Tucker are in rhythm. That said, there were definitely times this season when I wondered why more teams weren't doing what the Suns did and basically daring anyone else to beat them. Some of it had to do with health, the Rockets just not having enough bodies to step in and make those shots, but some of it too came down to players just not executing and making those shots. So tonight, I really thought it was a feel-good game on a number of levels. First off, they won 20th in 23 games. They got out healthy. The second to last game a season ago, that was when Luke Bamute dislocated his shoulder, and that had effects all throughout the postseason. Everyone looked healthy in this one, so all of that was really positive. Having to mention Daniel House Jr. off the bench, 13 points, 6 rebounds, 5 of 7 overall, 3 of 4 from behind the arc. Let's throw him in the mix. Let's also mention Austin Rivers, 10 points, including the record-breaking 27th made 3 for the Rockets. Let's not forget about that. Some of those came in garbage time. The Rockets have knocked on the door so many times of breaking their own record of 26 made 3s in a game. Tonight, they finally did it. Austin Rivers had the 27th. So as much as we talk about the 4 starters and taking advantage of the 4-on-3 scenarios that the trapping scheme against Harden presented, the bench executed as well. They did play some with Harden. And so when you have Daniel House, Iman Shumpert, Austin Rivers, all shooting relatively well. In the case of House and Rivers, 3 of 4 and 2 of 5 from behind the arc, respectively, it's probably going to be a good night. And it was for the Rockets, and they played their nine-man rotation, more on that momentarily, and no one got hurt. So at this point, I think that's all you could ask for. Tactically, I really don't expect any team in the playoffs to do what Phoenix did. I think that was a bit of a gimmick because, well, they're playing out the string. It's a 19-62 team. They're just trying not to give up 60 or 70 to Harden. And I think on some superficial level, they'd rather have someone else do the beating. Fortunately, the Rockets, Eric Gordon, Clint Capella, Daniel House, Austin Rivers, PJ Tucker, you can go up and down the lineup. There were other guys that stepped up, and it just felt so fitting in a season that throughout the year has been about Harden not having enough help. Well, now they're healthy at the right time. They're peaking, and those guys stepped up. And when Harden was doubled, when he was not able to shine, then they were able to take full advantage. The Rockets do not need James Harden to win this game. That said, in the closing minutes of the third quarter, when you thought that he might have a relative night off, I think he was at 16 points midway through the third, and then the Suns relaxed their defense, then James Harden still, even with a 30-35 point lead, reminded you that, yeah, he is still capable at any time of having one of those bursts where he just pours in 14-15 points in a matter of 3 or 4 minutes and takes over a game, in this case, extending it to what would be a 40-plus point lead after the third quarter and into the fourth, and ultimately becoming a 36-point final margin. Overall, I don't really take anything grand out of it because it's a weak opponent. The Rockets did what they needed to do, and they got out healthy. So for a Rockets team that already entered with great vibes, having won 19 of the last 22, well, now you can make it 20 of 23. The competition is going to get a lot steeper starting Tuesday night in Oklahoma City. We covered the major ramifications of that earlier. But as far as everything you can do, as far as handling your own business going into it, the Rockets certainly did that. Kudos to them for the win. And again, they improved to 53-28 on the season. Winners now of 20 of their last 23 basketball games. And remember, to get this show every day on what is currently the NBA's hottest team, subscribe to Locked On Rockets on the new Himalaya podcast app. In this ever-expanding podcast world, you need Himalaya with their personally curated playlist and new features each and every day. Download Himalaya at your app store and subscribe to Locked On Rockets. A few final thoughts as we close out Sunday evening show here at Locked On Rockets. This is the third and final segment of our usual 3 points recap. We spent segment one discussing the playoff implications, segment two discussing the highlights as far as the individual stat lines, James Harden in the 149-113 win, putting up 30, also had 13 boards, 9 assists, a couple of steals. Clint Capella, 22-13. Eric Gordon, 26 points, made 8 three-pointers, which tied his career high. Daniel House, 13 off the bench. Austin Rivers and Nene, 10 apiece. Really, up and down the roster, it was a steady effort. So we talked about the high points in segment two. Here in segment three, I want to point out what I think was fairly telling in terms of the Rockets' usage patterns. We heard Jeff Bezdelic, who continues to be the interim coach while Mike D'Antoni is battling the stomach flu. They say he's doing better. They expect him back Tuesday in Oklahoma City. Nonetheless, the coaching staff, they work together. So just because Bezdelic is the coach tonight, it doesn't mean that things would have been different if D'Antoni was there. They each are working on the same things. They are still in communication. And what was most intriguing to me tonight, especially if you listen to Saturday's show when we recap the Friday win over the Knicks, was in how the Rockets deployed the nine men of their rotation. And if you listen to Bezdelic after the game, he said that even when they were up 30 points, which they were at the half, the Rockets, we've talked a lot about their defense in this revival, this stretch in which they've won 20 of 23 games to get to the West number three seed at the moment, and being a top two, top three defense since the All-Star break, that's been a big part of it. And it continued tonight, along just 47 in the first half. Suns did get to 113 because there was extensive garbage time in this one, really everything after the halftime buzzer. So that continued. But beyond just playing defense and generally playing hard at all times, what Jeff Bezdelic said after the game was that they were working on developing the right habits. That's a phrase we heard from Chris Paul as well. And how do you develop the right habits? Well, you got to have the guys out there that are actually going to be playing when it matters. So yet again, to see Shumpert, Rivers, and House ahead of Gerald Green, even though Gerald has been active for 3 consecutive games, I said after Friday's game that my sense, I would not be floored. Matchups can change it one way or the other. I don't think it's just a commanding advantage. But with Gerald being cleared for three straight games and yet him not getting any sort of significant run, especially when the game is competitive in any of them, tonight he did not even enter until the fourth quarter, and this was with the Rockets having a 30-point lead at the half. It does seem to me that they are leaning to the defensive presence of Iman Shumpert over the microwave potential of Gerald Green. Now, can they change it? Sure. But at this point, now that Gerald has been cleared for three games, it's hard for me to imagine that all of a sudden, going into what's going to be really stressful games from here on out, Oklahoma City to close the year, the regular season on Tuesday, and then the playoffs, it's hard for me to imagine that they anticipate a major role for Gerald Green if they weren't going to give him any low-leverage minutes before, or at least low-leverage minutes with the right players. And playing in the sets alongside the types of players that you're going to be playing with in the playoffs, that's what building the right habits means. It's not just individually. I mean, of course you can do it in the fourth quarter of a blowout. Yeah, there are certain things you always want to see players play hard, yada, yada, throw out all the cliches. But a lot of the habits come down to how you play together. And how you play together means, are you in the groupings that you can expect to be in? So I wondered last week, Gerald was cleared midweek. He missed 7 to 10 days with the adductor strain. And I wonder, maybe they're bringing him back slowly for medical reasons. At this point, now that he's been cleared for three games and he's played in garbage time of all three, it seems pretty clear that Iman Shumpert is ahead of him in the coaching staff's pecking order. Now, could some of it be that they have had Shumpert for a lot less time than Gerald and they want to collect data? Sure, but I would only buy that to a point. I said that through Friday. At this stage, considering this was the last true tune-up game, everything from here on out has meaning, I think Gerald Green would have gotten run earlier if he were in the cards as far as a substantial role. Now, that does not mean that he's not going to play. Again, last year, the Rockets, in their biggest game of the season, Game 7 of the Western Conference Finals, they turned to Joe Johnson and Ryan Anderson, who had very small roles throughout the entire postseason. So anything can happen. And Gerald Green, he keeps his head on straight. Nothing seems to faze him. Even if he doesn't play, he's going to do what he does in terms of firing up those threes, getting out in transition, providing energy. And even if he doesn't play, he might be the one guy that doesn't need rhythm. They can trust him. He's been around the block with this squad before. So I'm not writing him off. It's just, to me, if they were anticipating elevating Green over any of the other three wings, Rivers, House, or Shumpert, and to me, Rivers and House are way too unique, too much upside in terms of their roles. If there's one you could argue for Green ahead of, it's Shumpert. And while I'm not 100% convinced that it's Shumpert, I was starting to sense that on Friday with the patterns, and then to see them now, the third game that Green is healthy, go back to that. It just seems that whatever upside Gerald Green offers offensively, the microwave potential in terms of making threes, it's dwarfed by the defensive stability of Iman Shumpert. And of course, his role, they acquired him at the trade deadline, so he's been out there for the majority of this run, in which the Rockets have now won 20 of their last 23 games since the All-Star break. So I do think, even against a lesser opponent in Phoenix, considering this was the last true tune-up game, we did learn something as far as the rotation from Jeff Bezdelic and eventually Mike D'Antoni and the entire Rockets coaching staff. Similarly, I think we saw tonight such good energy from Nene. I mentioned he had 10 points in his 14 minutes, 4 of 7 from the field, also had 3 rebounds, 3 assists. They ran the offense through him at times. His energy was infectious, and for much the same reasons that I think Shumpert is currently ahead of Gerald Green in the pecking order, my guess is that unless the matchup is uber athletic, and if that's the case, maybe even they go small altogether and don't even have a true backup five, but my sense is that against most playoff opponents, they view Nene as more beneficial than Kenneth Faried. Now, the good thing about Faried, he strikes me as a big man's version of Gerald Green, in that even if he's playing or not, you know what he can do in terms of his athleticism, his rebounding, his scoring, as far as vertical spacing, the putbacks. So he might not have to play that much and be in rhythm to provide contributions if you need him, or if a game situation, the matchup dictates looking for more offense, guys like Gerald Green, Kenneth Faried. With Nene throughout the year, it's hard to gauge exactly what the coaching staff's true patterns are, because from what I've been told, there's generally a plan before the year when they're going to use Nene, basically a maintenance program for here's how much he's going to play each week and how they get his body in peak form heading into the postseason. So it's tough to say from game to game exactly what we've learned and some of here's what the coaching staff is really thinking. Generally speaking, though, I think we have seen in the higher leverage matchups, there's more trust in Nene than Faried. And in this one, even with the Rockets up 30 at the half. They still brought out Nene in the second half, which to me, of course, talk about building habits, chemistry, being with the guys who are going to be on the court in the playoffs. It's the second to last game, and really the last low stress sort of chemistry building game. It's going to be intense Tuesday in Oklahoma City. So to me, to keep Nene out there, even in the second half, there are a couple of reasons for that. One, the habits, the continuity, those units on the bench, because with all the injuries, they still have not really had that many games together. They wanted to get them a more run. And then secondly, I think they wanted Nene to play 15 minutes, which he eventually did, even in a blowout, because they're trying to build him back up to where he's ready to go in what could be a 15 minutes per game role in the playoffs. So again, Nene over Fried. I don't think it's every single game. I don't think it's every series, every matchup. There could be some variance, but just generally speaking, I think Nene over Fried is similar to Shumpert over Green, and that this team is opting for defensive stability because they know, aside from Eric Gordon, the biggest change in this current 20-3 stretch, how have they gone from pretty good to now being arguably the NBA's best team since the All-Star break? It's been because the defense went from bad to really good. And if there are debates as far as the last rotation spots entering the playoffs, I think they're going to err on the side of defense. So for now, who knows what happens in Oklahoma City, and we'll see who the Rockets draw in the first round. There's a lot of things that could change. But my guess, we know seven guys that are in the rotation, the starters, plus Daniel House and Austin Rivers. It's that last wing spot and that backup big. And to me, it's the seven that we know, barring injury, and at this point with one game left, my money is on Iman Shumpert and Nene. I wouldn't bet the house, but I think after these two games, which the Rockets have clearly gotten to experiment, in my estimation, we're starting to see where the coaching staff is leaning, or at least what their inclinations are as they head closer to the playoffs, which begin in less than a week, either next Saturday or Sunday. So I think that will about do it for our show on this Sunday, April 7th. If you want more content before our next episode, before all the games on Tuesday night, including Rockets Thunder, of course, then the best place to hear from me before then and during the game, of course, and interact is on Twitter. I'm on there at Ben Dubose, and the show is on there at Locked On Rockets. But if Twitter isn't your thing, Facebook works too. Just go to facebook.com/LockedOnRockets. And one final option is email. LockedOnRockets@gmail.com is the address, which you can use to ask me questions about the team, make suggestions for the show, or inquire about how to become a potential advertiser, again, just as our friends at Wyze were today. Remember Wyze, that's W-Y-Z-E, is the indoor camera that does it all. Head on over to Wyze.com/lock to get the guaranteed lowest price on their top-notch camera equipment. Again, that's WYZE.com/locked. And on the subject of sponsors and friends of the program, remember that you can subscribe to this show on the new Himalaya Podcast app, as well as Apple Podcast, Google Podcast, Spotify, and more. And when you get in your car, you can even tell your smart device to play podcast Locked On Rockets. Once again, the happy final from Toyota Center in the final home game of the 2018-2019 regular season, Fan Appreciation Night. Well, the Rockets, they paid their fans back the best way that I think fans would like to be paid back, with a win, a blowout at that. Rockets 149, Suns 113, and they set a new NBA mark with 27 made threes in the process. It's the 20th win in 23 games for your Rockets, who now improve to 53-28 on the season, keeping them in the number three spot in the Western Conference, entering the NBA season's final 2 days on Tuesday and Wednesday. For the Rockets, it wraps up on Tuesday with the potential playoff preview at Oklahoma City. For other teams, it goes on until Wednesday. So not just the game the Rockets play, but also what's going on around the association and the playoff combinations. Of course, there's a lot to look forward to, and we'll have you covered right here on the Locked On Rockets podcast. That Rockets Thunder game on Tuesday night, for reasons discussed back in our first segment of this show, it's got massive playoff implications up and down the bracket. So as far as who the Rockets are going to play, what seed they are, and also what the bottom of the West bracket looks like, because that's where the Thunder are going to be. Yeah, there's going to be a lot at stake in Tuesday night's game, as we discussed earlier in the program, regardless of whether it is the round one matchup or not. Anyway, once that's all over, we'll be breaking down all of that night's action and what it means right here at Locked On Rockets, your home for daily podcast commentary on everything Houston Rockets basketball. For now, have a great start to your week, and please come back soon for more episodes.